Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're live on College Green down in Westminster. It's a pretty grim day. The sun is occasionally appearing between the clouds. It's very windy. There's hurricane conditions down here. I'm joined now by Joe Twyman, co-founder and director of Delta Pole. Joe, a little bit chilly sitting there, but welcome
good morning.
The tent of Talk Radio. And it's better to be inside it, is all I can tell you, than to be outside it. Not always true of the Tory party. But let me just give you the number, because before we talk to Joe, I want to hear from some of you out there as well. 0344 499 1000. Andy says, if there were more people proposing a Brexit deal like Marcus Fish, it would have been a lot smoother, I'm sure. Instead, we've got idiots like Boris Johnson spouting nonsense, and Tories just trying to stab the Prime Minister in the back for their own gain. It's not like them, is it? And Felix says he was impressed by listening to Marcus Fish as well. He was calm and persuasive. Joe, you're a man that attracts popularity and unpopularity, if you like, in your business of polling. Marcus Fish said that they've got a plan that I'd never heard before. I don't know where he's been hiding the plan that he said he had, but have you ever heard of Marcus Fisher's plan from the ERG?
No, I haven't. There's been various rumours of suggestions of plans, and people say they have plans only for them to disappear. The difficulty that any politician on any side of the argument has is that although we are set to leave in March next year, actually the Cabinet Office are already having extensive briefings with big companies and across different industries, saying if it's not sorted out by the end of this year, they have to go into no deal mode, because there will be no bandwidth to deal with anything else.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Marcus Fish, and he was a very good guest, and I was very happy to have him, when he was talking about how we've got plenty of time for this. I mean, you'd be lucky to buy a house right now and move into it by March the 29th. The idea that we're suddenly going to have loads of time to completely tear up the Brexit agreement that Theresa May has got in her hand and start with a new one in order to change it by March 29th is nonsense, isn't it?
While that's true, it's also true that it's in nobody's interest for this to look easy.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be seen to be working as hard as possible, whether it's the people in Europe or the people in Westminster. Everyone wants the public to know that they have made every possible effort and they have taken it right up to the wire. If they'd said a year ago, oh, actually, we've sorted it all out, it's all fine, then somebody would have turned around and said, oh, well, this isn't the best deal.
Which was kind of the default position until suddenly they sprung on us the idea that this deal was now done suddenly.
Yes, yeah, that's right. I was expecting it to go even later. But, of course, it may still do that. Think back to 2008 and the US stimulus package that came about after the financial crisis there. There was a huge commotion getting that through their parliament. Right. And indeed, it failed a couple of times. The markets then crashed. There was all sorts of troubles with currency and the Dow Jones. And then everyone came on board with the president. It wouldn't surprise me if a similar sort of thing happened here over the next couple of weeks. Perhaps the first, even the second vote on the deal fails in Parliament, but then some sort of concessions, however you want to characterise those, go through. And after a bit of market turmoil, everyone reluctantly agrees.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been my view kind of overall. But I mean, I've been sort of jumping about like most people have over the course of the last sort of year and a half. From first of all saying, well, surely they don't want us to leave any more than we do want to leave, so we should be able to work something out. Two, you know, after the Salzburg business, well, they've been treating Theresa May terribly, maybe we should just leave without a deal. To suddenly thinking, actually, it's never going to happen now, we're never going to get a deal. You know, I consider myself to be reasonably well informed about Brexit, but I'm quite confused now as to what on earth is going on.
Oh, well, you have 585 pages of deal to read to clear everything
I'm
up.
Like Jeremy Corbyn, I'm not reading all of it, I'm afraid.
No, me neither. I actually don't. I mean, and this is true for most of the general public out there. You and I have not read the deal. I doubt most people here on College Green have read it. And we are not unusual in that respect. Instead, we are taking our cues from the leaders, from the parties, and from the people that we hear on TV and radio.
Sure. And what's your polling telling you? What's your data telling you? Because we were hearing from Ross Kempsall earlier that the Tories are dropping like a stone in the sort of public opinion polls at the moment.
Well, there are two ways of looking at this. Firstly, if you take a step back and you say, OK, the principle of Britain leaving the EU, you find consistently that between 6 and 7 out of 10 people believe that we should leave, either because they supported it in the first instance or because they think that democracy and the result of the referendum should be upheld. So in principle, you've got a large proportion of people believing that we should leave. But when it comes to the specifics of this deal, and it's worth pointing out that, of course, most people, as we say, aren't paying attention to the actual specifics, but when you ask people about this deal, fewer than one in five actually thinks it's a good idea and supports it. And so this is a real problem for Theresa May, because she has a huge number of people who think it goes too far and a huge number of people that think it doesn't go far enough.
Right.
And she is stuck in the middle, really managing to succeed with very few people.
Indeed. Well, what we heard when the deal was first announced was that because it upsets both sides, it must be somewhere in the right sort of area, because you can't possibly please one side and then upset the other side. You have to be even-handed. So by upsetting both, is that the right way to go?
Well, it's a good start from her point of view, I would imagine. I mean, it may, of course, be that she expected everyone to like it, but I think that's unlikely. I think the more likely option is that she views this as a good start and a position from which to bring people around, because she has to convince members of her cabinet, members of her party, members of parliament, and most importantly, the British people, that this is a good deal. And that process started last week, and it continues. It continued with the Sunday shows yesterday, and it continues now. For her to convince people that she is the best person to deliver this and that this is the best deal for Britain. She has a long way to go and a short time to achieve it, but things can move very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And in the absence of anyone else, she may be seen as the least worst option.
And in terms of the way the public opinion is kind of formed, if you like, has it been affected to a large extent by the attitude, the negative attitude around all of this Brexit business? That, you know, there's always been somebody unhappy with either the result of the referendum, the fact that the referendum was even held, you know, now what has come out of a sort of breakup agreement that Theresa May has emerged from Brussels with. You know, there's so much negative speaking going on that must affect public opinion, mustn't it?
Yeah, inevitably you have a group of people who've been upset since the result came out, and they have had the lion's share of the coverage. Most of the protests have been about a second referendum and staying in the EU. We haven't seen so much support since the referendum result for leaving, at least among the sort of the things that happen out there. But as time has moved on, we've seen a lot of people disappointed on both sides, because on the Leave side, a lot of people thought, well, I want my kind of Brexit. I want Brexit to feel real for me.
Right.
And it's inevitable with that covering so many different views that a lot of people are going to be disappointed.
Well, that's the problem. I don't think there are two people in the country that would have the same view of what Brexit should be. So it's an incredibly difficult thing to achieve, isn't it?
From a public opinion point of view, it is a tightrope for Theresa May to walk. She cannot please all of the people all of the time. The problem she has at the moment is she doesn't appear to be able to please any of the people any of the time.
And she's running out of cabinet ministers as well. I mean, we've got a new Brexit secretary that nobody's ever heard of. But she already announced at the weekend that she's going to be doing more negotiating on her own, heading the negotiating team. So exactly what this new guy's going to do is anybody's guess.
That's right. We have a new future former Brexit secretary in place now.
Yes.
And for how long he lasts remains to be seen. And also his role appears to be very different from that of Dominic Raab and David Davis before him. But with time running out, it's perhaps inevitable that Theresa May says, right, now this is down on me, it's down to me, I'm the only person that can do it.
Is it possible to predict who is likely to emerge as the next leader of the Tory party if, in fact, she does get dislodged? Is it too early to poll on that kind of thing?
Well, you can poll on it, but the results have very little predictive power. At the moment, the candidates divide into two groups, those that the people don't like and those that the people don't know.
Right.
And so it's not a great situation to be in. Boris Johnson appears to be the least worst of those candidates,
right.
But one thing we know about Tory leadership contests is the favourite very rarely wins.
Yes.
I imagine that the next leader may come out of left field, someone perhaps very few of us have heard of, who is not as tainted by the whole Brexit experience and comes across more as a unity candidate to take the party forward past Brexit rather than dealing with Brexit itself.
Yeah, I mean, that is the problem for the Tories, isn't it? Finding somebody that you like, that you think would want to actually take the country through Brexit, because even if they have somebody that takes them through Brexit, that might be the last thing they ever do, and they get through Brexit, and then there's a general election, which they then lose.
Yeah, perhaps a caretaker manager in football parlance would be the best option, in which case perhaps someone who voted for Brexit would be the obvious choice. But who is that? It gets very, very complicated very, very quickly, and it may be better for the party in terms of long-term electoral performance to stick with Theresa May, get her to absorb all the slings and arrows, and then move on to someone who is clean, in inverted commas.
Now, you talk to a lot of people in Westminster throughout the course of your work collecting data and stuff like that. What's your sense of what's going to happen in the next couple of days or even this whole week?
It's so difficult to say, but my sense is that the most likely option, that doesn't mean it will definitely happen, but I think the most likely option is that Theresa May will scrape through and that the deal will be supported by Parliament with one or two small amendments, but perhaps not on the first vote.
Okay, Joe, thanks very much indeed. Joe Twyman there, co-founder and director of Delta Poll.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Help! I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help! When I was younger, so much younger than today.
03444991000. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're live from College Green down at Westminster, where occasionally the rain gets so torrential that you actually think the world might be coming to an end. If you're Theresa May, you're still speaking to the CBI. She's trying to convince them the world is not coming to an end. She's trying to convince them that actually everything's fine, everything's dandy, and don't worry at all about what's going to happen on March the 29th, because her plan is the only plan and the best plan for us to go forward. I'm not so sure about that. We'll be talking some more about it. Anne-Marie Trevelyan is going to be joining us. She resigned from the government only last week, and of course she's going to hope that the number reaches 48 so that there can be a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister, even though at the moment it doesn't look as if they've got that kind of level of support. Also coming up, we're going to speak to Hannah Hope, the Sun's showbiz correspondent, live in Australia, because I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here started, of course, last night. So far no politicians are in there, but you never know, some of them might decide to leave these parts and go somewhere slightly warmer. It is also International Men's Day today, and we're going to start taking some calls on that. 03444991000. Let's talk to Ryan, who is in the New Forest. Hello, Ryan.
Good morning. How you doing?
Yeah, very well indeed. A bit rainy and wet here, to be honest. And we're in a tent, which is not very well protected. So apart from that, it's great.
No, that's all right. It's quite nice here. I'm at Andover today. It's all right. It's nice.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. How are you celebrating International Men's Day, Ryan?
Well, I thought, but when I went on Facebook, I remember at some point last year, when it was International Women's Day, there was a nice little thing popped up that said, celebrate International Women's Day. So I thought, oh, I heard it today. I thought, I better check. Went straight on Facebook, nothing for International Men's Day.
Nothing at all?
Thought, oh, no, not one thing. No, not
well,
a
message. Maybe you should make your own and share it, maybe.
Oh, no, I'm not doing that. Let's face it. God, I could hardly switch the thing on. I'm an old school person when it comes to the technology. I basically just can only do with Facebook, because I used to be on it when I used to look for women before I had a missus. So,
have you given up looking for women now then?
I think she inadvertently makes me every day by her accent. No, I'm only joking. Of course I have.
Oh, right.
I've got two kids.
Okay.
And I'm absolutely happy.
Well, do you know what? I'm also looking on Google, because they'll often celebrate things like International Women's Day with a little bit of a graphic, but they've got nothing on there either.
No, exactly. I mean, I'm now starting to think that the conspiracy is that Brexit was only formulated so that when this day come along, that we all talk about Theresa May and not men. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, I don't know. It all seems a bit much. I don't know. It's not to be celebrated to be a man, is it, anymore? Really, in the extreme sense as it used to be. So
they're not allowed to celebrate it, no, because, of course, if you celebrate that, it makes you a misogynist, Ryan.
Of course, of course. Well, you know, just by the very existence. I mean, it seems also like, you know, the pro-major extreme feminist lobby, because we all know that feminism is a correct, you know, way to live. It should be, you know, the inclusion of women and everything.
Well, we should all be feminists. There's nothing wrong with being a feminist, I don't think, Ryan. And I think men can be feminists as well. And we should all believe in equality. And that's all fine. But certainly the idea that there is equality now, I think, is a nonsense.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's sort of men are sort of portrayed now as the after effects of the whole of history up till 1960, which might as well be known as the Holocaust. I mean, it is literally just silly. I mean,
very silly. That's a very silly name for it as well, by the way.
Oh yeah, I know. Well, yeah. Well, yeah, of course it is. It's extreme.
But I'll let you off with it as long as you don't repeat it.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought it was quite amusing. Yeah, I was.
Well, it's not.
Okay. Well, men need to. Men did need to change once upon a time. I went to see my dad on Friday. I haven't seen him in 20 years. Now, he's a 1970s right. bloke. He's stuck in the 70s. He made jokes to his new wife about how she could make a bacon sandwich for him and he wouldn't. And, you know, I don't change the bins and
how
stuff like that.
How come you haven't seen him for 20 years?
Because that's the sort of bloke he is.
Okay.
Because he's stuck in the pub. Now all the pubs are shut. He's got nothing to do, so he phoned me up. And it's...
Well, yeah, that's nice. You see, so feminism has brought you and your father together. There you go.
No, well, yeah, no, but I would say, look, men like that needed to go. I thought we did quite well a few years ago at getting on a decent route towards somewhere else. But then I suppose to not celebrate men full stop altogether, is that not missing a trick for this whole equality push? Or is it, do you think...
Well, I suppose so. I'm not really in favour of days for anything, to be honest. I mean, you can have a pancake day, you can have an International Men's Day, you can have an International Gherkin Day. I mean, what's the point, to be honest? Most of it is all a marketing ploy for you to spend money on something. I mean, apparently it's Black Friday begins today. Guess what? It's only Monday.
Well, I know, but Black Friday, I mean, I think in a few years' time, it would have got so far, it won't be a week, it won't be a day. It'd probably be, we refer to it as Black
History
Month.
It'd be all year.
Yeah.
It'd just be all year. Well, this is about shopping, I have to tell you, Ryan. Anyway, listen, thanks for calling in, and enjoy the rest of your International Men's Day, and I hope you do something sensible with it, and not just go to the pub with your dad. We've got lots more to do, of course, 03444991000. Some of you eagle-eyed television viewers may have noticed that last night I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here started. You will have noticed, of course, that Ant and Dec did not begin to host it. It was instead Dec and Holly Willoughby, and by all accounts, it all went rather well. Let's go down to Hannah Hope now, the Sun Showbiz correspondent, live in Australia. Hannah, a very good morning to you, or a good evening, as I would normally say to you.
Good morning and good evening.
Now, listen, I think everybody has, but without a shadow of a doubt, given a thumbs up and 10 out of 10 to Holly Willoughby, haven't they?
Well, yeah, everyone was holding their breath to see how Holly would do beside Dec in Ant's absence. But I think she did really well. Dec did most of the heavy lifting when it came to the jokes, but she was funny, she was light, she was fluffy, I thought they were almost flirty, actually, in their banter, but it was
they
really
were.
Easy to watch. They were quite flirty, weren't they? Well, but it was easy to watch, and I felt kind of safe in their hands. You never want to feel on edge with presenters, do you? You just want to feel relaxed and so you can actually enjoy what's going on.
No, and in fact, it was a bit of a masterstroke, really, wasn't it, from the producer's point of view, to bring her in, because we all know they share an agent, we all know they share an awful lot in common in terms of she's done stuff with Ant and Dec before. She's very kind of, I don't want to use the word easygoing in the wrong way, but she's very easygoing in the sense that she's not trying to hog the limelight. You know, he was making quite a few risque little jokes, she was giggling away. You know, it was as you say, it was all very comfortable and familiar, wasn't it?
They've been friends for decades, yeah. So they are mates outside of work. They party together. They live in the same part of London. So I guess that kind of relaxed vibe came across on screen. And it was quite funny. You're right, Dex did seem to be enjoying taking the limelight. Like, he was being quite cheeky, almost childlike.
Yeah.
So maybe Ant is the one who keeps him in check. So I think that she's going to have to kind of make sure he doesn't get too kind of wayward. But yeah, it was quite nice to see.
It was nice to see. I suppose let's talk about a few of the highlights, if that's the right word. Anne Hegarty was in tears during the start of the show, saying that she might quit just after entering the camp. What was all that about?
Anne Hegarty, one of the chasers, she found it all a little bit overwhelming in the first day. She does suffer from Asperger's, and I think for someone with that condition, it can be quite difficult being put into quite intense social situations. But she dealt with it really well. All of her teammates rallied round her, hugged her, made sure she was all right. And by the end of it, she was like, oh, I'm glad I'm in this team now. I feel happy that I'm here. It was quite funny with Harry Redknapp, of course. He didn't realise, he's never watched the show before, and he didn't realise that when the cameras stopped rolling, that was it, you still don't get anything to eat. He was expecting bacon sarnie and a cheese roll, he was saying, to be handed out around the back with some coffee out of a food van. So that was quite hilarious to see. I don't think he really realised just how much he'd been roughing it. So I think...
Well, this is a weird thing, isn't it? Because... Sorry, go on.
No, carry on.
No, I was going to say, that's the strange thing. I mean, you get Anne Hegarty not realising that she might not react well to sort of some social situations going into a reality TV show. Then you get Harry Redknapp, who's apparently never ever seen the show, going in and thinking that it wouldn't be anything like it was. I mean, you know, don't these people get properly prepped?
Yeah, you do wonder, and you sort of think, it's not that hard to do a little bit of research. You only need half an hour and an internet connection to YouTube just to see what it's like. But I mean, Harry especially just didn't, he looked a bit bemused the whole way through. One of my colleagues was saying that that's just his normal resting face. He always looks a little bit bemused. I'm not a huge football fan, so I don't really know what his normal face is. But yeah, he just looks a bit like, what am I doing here? And then towards the end...
Well, his normal face is
like,
also... there were a few memes going around yesterday because his normal face is peering out of a car window on transfer deadline day, talking to somebody out of the car. So people were putting him inside a car in the jungle, which was quite funny.
And as well, whenever Holly and Deck were asking him questions about a trial or what was happening, he was reeling off his response as if it was a match report. It's like, Harry, you just need to be yourself. Just be conversational. He was just talking as if he was, like, you know, on Sky Sports or something. But I think he's a bit of a master talker. He does tell a good yarn. So I think there'll be some really good sound bites from him. And he's actually very watchable, like, love him or hate him. He's got a great personality. And I think him and Nick Knowles will be a good double act. They seem to be getting on famously at the moment. But as we know, with these kind of egos and big personalities, they can end up rubbing each other up the wrong way. John Barrowman is louder than and larger than life. He's very entertaining, but I can see him getting a little bit annoying after a few days.
Well, I find them all very annoying after no days at all, actually, to be honest. But aside from Holly and Deck, was there any other signs of sort of visible flirtation going on?
We didn't really get much flirtation because the campmates are split into two groups almost straight away and two camps. We've got a luxury camp and a really basic camp. But I think as they start to merge, the singletons will get to meet each other. Emily Atack, the in-betweeners actress, has shown herself to be quite the screamer. Her job was to jump out of a plane, but she really was screaming for her life, blood-curdling screams. It was quite uncomfortable to listen to. And the audience obviously picked up on that because they've now voted her in to do the first bush chucker trial, which will see her go into a python cave and have to grab stars from loads of snakes. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more of Emily's screams into tonight's show.
Oh, great. So, I mean, we've also heard of some of the more vegan style guests saying that they're not sure they're going to be able to do some of the bush tucker trials. That's another one for the show prep people, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we've got Fleur East, who's a vegan. The vamp star, James McVeigh, he's a vegan. Nick Nels, who has written a vegan cookbook, is a sometime vegan. He calls himself a flexitarian. I don't know what that is. That sounds like a completely different talking point altogether. But they have all said that they're going to do the Bush Tucker trials. So it seems at the moment they are all up for the eating challenges. So that obviously doesn't work with their vegan lifestyle, chomping down on animal balls and all the rest of it, all the different things they have to eat and insects and things. But it looks like they're going to do it for the sake of the camp, which is great because it's more entertaining for us at home.
Well, it is indeed. So, I mean, have you picked out sort of any likely winners yet, or is it too early to say?
It's quite early to say, but in the last few years, we have seen the younger contestants winning the show. We've had three women winning over the last 3 years, Scarlett Moffat, Toff from Made in Chelsea last year, and Vicky Patterson.
Yes.
So it would be nice to see a boy win, or a man win, especially as it's International Men's Day today. Never heard of that one before. but yeah, I think that James...
I think down in Australia, I think they celebrate that in Australia every day, International Men's Day. But do you think it's more to do now with your profile on social media as well? The more well-known the contestants are on social media, the more votes they get.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, ITV have been quite clever over the last few years in bringing in some of like the younger reality stars who maybe we haven't really heard of, you know, the older viewers. But actually, James McVeigh from The Vamps has got over 1 million followers on social media. So he has got a huge fan base. So even some of his fans who don't even watch the show will probably vote for him because they want him to do well. So he could be an early winner. Emily Atack as well. She comes across as very likeable. She's very disarming and shows her personality. So she's coming across as an early favourite too.
Okay, brilliant. Hannah, thank you very much indeed. We'll speak to you, I'm sure, later on in the week. Hannah Hope there, the Sun Showbiz reporter, live in Australia with the cast of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Independent Republic of Mike Graham, you know what to do. 0344 499 1000. We're coming live to you from College Green down in Westminster, where there's a bit of a febrile atmosphere, albeit very quiet on the surface. Nobody's quite sure precisely what's going to happen next. The Daily Mirror today has got a story saying civil unrest on the streets, a shortage of medicine, fuel and food, and our ports and airports at a standstill. It sounds like a Project Fear description of a post-Brexit nightmare scenario. Well, that's because that's exactly what it is. It is a Project Fear description of a post-Brexit nightmare scenario. And in fact, I'm going to rip the paper up, but you can't actually hear me ripping the paper up. I used to work for the Daily Mirror when it was a good paper. What a load of rubbish. We're now joined by Anne-Marie Trevelyan. Anne-Marie, very good morning to you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's not very nice out there, is it?
It's chilly. It's a chilly November day.
A bit windy, a bit unpredictable, the weather. What's happening over the road? What's going on? What can you tell us?
Well, the Prime Minister's just been making a speech at the CBI,
yes,
where she's reiterated again that the withdrawal agreement, the divorce part of all this process, apparently is signed and sealed and shut down. Which for me, you know, just sadly reiterates why I felt I had to resign last week, because the 175 pages of this Northern Ireland Protocol, as far as I'm concerned, are just absolutely wrong and we shouldn't be signing up to that.
There are sort of mixed signals as well coming out, aren't there? Because I'm seeing that some government sources are now briefing that, in fact, the withdrawal agreement is not absolutely and utterly set in stone. There might be some little changes that can be made to it. While at the same time, she's up there talking to the CBI and saying, this is the best deal we're going to get. This is the deal that we want to have. This is going to be great for us on in terms of the borders, in terms of immigration. It's going to be great on trade. We might have a future conversation about our future relationship. It's all a bit woolly, isn't it?
Well, there seems to be slightly, you know, differing messages.
I take
the words from the Prime Minister's mouth, and she said it's, you know, it's done. The withdrawal agreement is what it is, and I'm going to sign that on Sunday.
Yes.
So that, for me, is very clear. And, you know, a Prime Minister should lead from the front, and that's what she's doing. I just fundamentally disagree with those terms, and I can't support them.
Now, apparently, there are also sort of two or three issues at stake here, aren't there? Because we're waiting to find out whether 48 members of the Tory party in Parliament will actually trigger the no-confidence vote. We don't yet know whether that number is going to be reached. What's your feeling on that?
I don't know. It's been a really interesting weekend, actually, because I think, you know, I mean, obviously a number of us resigned from government last week, mm-hmm. you know, making it clear that we felt that the policy wasn't one we could support. I think that, you know, I've been here 3 years, you know, but I've watched from the outside right. previous leadership changes. And I think, for me, it should be a personal and non-discussed thing. You know, it's a matter of conscience. It's a matter of... It's a really big call to say you can't, you know, put your support in your leader anymore. And I'm not a great fan of having it, you know, discussed in public, but I think everybody needs to be thinking about it. I've had a lot of phone calls from colleagues over the weekend, just really trying to get their heads around both, you know, the deal. It's 585 pages. There's a lot to read. And what that means, you know, if you are standing up for the 17.4 million majority who voted for us to leave, does that mean you can support it or not? And if it doesn't, will the Prime Minister listen?
And does it mean if they do get to the number, the 48 number, and I appreciate what it sounds to me like is it's a very much an individual process.
Well, I think it is, yeah.
It's not something which is being orchestrated. It's not people ringing other people up saying, have you put your letter in, and why haven't you put your letter in?
There's none of that. I think, you know, we're all very respectful of each other's interviews. The Conservative Party is, as they always say, a broad church.
Yeah.
I love that expression. But actually...
Maybe too broad. Maybe it needs to be broken up into three different parties.
No, we've tried that. It doesn't work so well for us electorally. We prefer all standing together, which is what, you know, we've done, and actually standing up for what is an unusual thing in a referendum, which is a decision given to us. It's an order given to us by the British people, and that we must meet.
Well, of course, there are some who say that it's not a binding referendum, aren't there, who want to have a second referendum, which would also presumably not be binding.
We've had two. We had the referendum, and then we had a general election, which took us all a bit by surprise. Mm. But that was also clear.
Especially the DUP took it by a great surprise.
Yeah, well, you know, Scotland, fantastic result for the Conservative Party there, so it wasn't all bad. Mm. But the reality was that that was effectively a second referendum. Both the Labour Party manifesto and the Tory Party manifesto had almost word for word clarity on what it was that, you know, delivering that referendum would mean. And most people voted for one or the other. Therefore, I think the British people were clear that that was what something they were supporting.
Indeed. But then, once again, if we do get the 48 magic number, and there is a vote of no confidence, now one of two things can happen. Theresa May could survive that. A lot of people think she will.
She could.
But there may be not enough Tory MPs that would back actually getting rid of her. Mm-hmm. If she does survive, she then moves on to the next stage, which is where she gets beaten and battered around trying to get the bill through, mm-hmm. the Brexit bill through, because there doesn't appear to be enough support in the Houses of Parliament for that. What's your view of that?
Well, I think at the moment it looks like she couldn't get this withdrawal agreement through, which honestly suits me because I don't think it's acceptable, in which case we would then, you know, kick into the clean global Brexit alternative moving forwards. And I think, you know, the reality was that large parts of the withdrawal agreement on lots of other aspects would be agreed to, and the EU would come back and say, well, why don't we at least sign those off? Otherwise, everyone's doing an awful lot of emergency legislation across 28 countries.
Right.
So, but the reality is that, you know, there won't be the support from the Conservatives to put it through. You know, the whips are busy being whips, and I'm sure there'll be efforts to persuade some Labour MPs.
But there's no DUP, there's no SNP, there's no...
I mean, I think they're very clear that, you know, just supporting the government's not an option. So we'll see, but, you know, we're hearing that that'll be somewhere in early December, so no doubt the whips will be very busy between now and then. But the reality
what is the alternative then? Because then you've got less than 3 months, really, to work out what to do next. And if no deal is the answer... you might as well push for that now, mightn't you?
Well, I mean, you know, if it's this withdrawal agreement as presented now, or no deal, which I consider to be a clean, you know, WTO terms, global Brexit, that would be my choice, and that is the default choice, because the government is now ready to implement. They know what needs to be done, and it's a matter of cracking on. Philip Hammond releasing the $3 billion he's put into the reserves to use to do that, and both, you know, supporting business and getting the government. Various constituent parts up and running. It'll be a lot of legislation to put through. We'd all be very busy, but maybe our electors will be pleased to see us working hard.
Yeah, maybe you should work over Christmas, perhaps. But I mean, the CBI have been saying before Theresa May speaks this morning that, you know, the rebels in the Tory party are causing financial unease and financial distress to the companies of this country, because we really know what it all means. We don't know what we're going to emerge with on March the 29th. We don't know what March the 30th is going to look like. We don't really know what the next sort of 6 months is going to look like, do we?
It all sounds a bit like the Millennium Bug kind of panic attack, doesn't it? On the 29th, 11:59, we're going to leave.
Yeah.
Leaving means some very clear things. Businesses I talk to have prepared where they need to, on the whole. The things they can't prepare for, if they're moving goods around, we will need to, you know, set those various, you know, emergency legislation to get it done so that it will all work from a practical perspective. And, you know, I would say we should have been perhaps putting those things with a sort of sunset clause in place a year ago, but we haven't. We are where we are. But it's perfectly possible to do. And, you know, most businesses are getting on. And businesses are very good at what they do. They plan and they adapt. And if they've got great products to sell, they'll carry on selling them.
OK. And final question. If, in fact, you don't get to 48 and it doesn't ever happen and there is no vote of no confidence in Theresa May, will you have resigned for no purpose whatsoever?
Well, no, not at all. I resign because I can't support the withdrawal agreement as it stands. I hope, you know, if in any way my doing what I consider to be the right thing, which is if you can't support the government you're in, you have to step out of it. You know, it's very basic rule of being in government, and I can't support it as it is. I hope that, you know, if my resignation registers and there's a chance to see it change, that's great. But the Prime Minister's been very clear both yesterday and today that as far as she's concerned, it's sealed.
So you'd prefer to see someone like Michael Gove in charge?
Well, I'd like to see the person who's going to deliver a real Brexit that ensures that we leave and we're a sovereign state and we can trade as we choose to in the future. All those businesses as yet created, you know, the jobs, the opportunities to sell our goods around the world in a way that we're limited by being in the EU at the moment.
Okay. Well, good luck with it. Anne-Marie, thank you very much indeed. Anne-Marie Trevelyan, MP for Berwick-upon-Tweed, talking to us down here at College Green. Westminster still awash with rumour about what might happen, what could happen, what might not happen. But luckily, the rain has stopped for the moment. This is Talk Radio. We've got loads more coming up. I'm Mike Graham.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.